Welcome back to Leveraging Leadership. The book for this book club episode is Lost and Broken, My Journey Back from Chronic Pain and Crippling Anxiety by Congressman Adam Smith. So let me give you three quick reasons why I chose this book, because it might not be the obvious choice. The first reason is it's about mental health, and I always appreciate when people talk about mental health in general. And I especially appreciate when people in the public eye or who are public figures in prominent positions talk about their struggle and challenges and overcoming mental health issues themselves. The second reason I chose this book is because I actually interned for Congressman Adam Smith way back a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. But right after university, literally the morning after I graduated, I flew out to DC and I did a summer internship with Congressman Smith's office. So when I saw this book and I kind of did a double take of, does that say by Congressman Adam Smith? Yes, it does. I had to pick it up. The third reason is because there are a few mentions of his chief of staff in the book at pivotal points in getting him through this. And so I remember her as well. She was, in fact, the first chief of staff that I've ever saw in real life, in person, ever worked for, and saw in action. And believe you me, she ran that office. She ran the office of Congressman Adam Smith. So hearing about her and her part in his journey was just kind of a nostalgic memory and reminder of, oh yes, like she was there. That was my first chief of staff. And yes, a chief of staff does play that special role or can play that very special role to their principal. So overarching outline of the book would be Congressman Smith is a sitting congressman. He is a top performer. He is successful by any conventional measure. And he starts having these physical things pop up. He starts having these panic attacks and anxiety episodes. And it gets worse and worse and worse to the point where he's having excruciating, debilitating pain, doing things like standing up and sitting down. He has multiple surgeries on different joints. He sees therapists and counselors and works with over 100 healthcare providers and professionals throughout this years and years and years long journey. And thankfully, he does find his way through and he finds a therapist to talk through some of the things that happened in his childhood that led to where he was today with certain issues. And he found people who looked at his holistic health instead of just this one symptom or this one episode or this one thing, people who took it in altogether and were able to help him. And now, thankfully, he has been able to move forward in a more comfortable, more confident way, and he is still serving in Congress today. Quick bio of the congressman, if you're not familiar with Adam Smith. He was elected to state Senate at age 25. And then he was elected to the U.S. Congress at age 31. So he came to both of those roles pretty young. And he is currently serving his 14th term, representing the 9th District of Washington State. And fun fact about the 9th District, there are two major military bases in that district. I actually think now they combine them into one. But when I was intern, there was McCord Air Force Base and then Fort Lewis Army Base, which were very large military bases. And I remember one of my jobs as intern was to give tours of the Capitol to visiting constituents. And so I got to meet a whole bunch of fantastic military members and a lot of their families. So a lot of the wives and little kids would come over to DC for their summer vacation. And one of the things they would go and do was get a tour of the Capitol. So I remember that. And I remember the fact that he had these military bases in his district meant that he had this really interesting intersection of committee and subcommittee seats. And so he would be part of the House Armed Services Committee, and he would be on intelligence committees and national security and these different committees. And he'd have this really unique perspectives on the issues of the day. And in fact, So when I was interning for him, he was the 10th ranking member of the House Armed Services Committee. And through the years, he worked his way up and he became the ranking member of the House Armed Services Committee. So a very important committee, very prominent, very influential position. And there's a really interesting story that he tells when he got that seat. And he got the news that he was the ranking member. It was late in the year, so it was around the holiday time, and he was rushing to the airport to fly back home to get home for the holidays with his family. And he had just been given the news. He got this very, very prominent, influential seat. And when the captain said, "We've landed, it's okay to take off your seatbelts," he made a beeline to the lavatory and sat on the lid of the toilet and broke down crying. And he said, "I just sat there crying for 15 minutes. And there was one thought that was running through my head. I don't deserve this. I don't deserve this seat." And when I read that, it struck me because it was such a contrast with my memory of him. So when I was interning, it was the congressman. And maybe I was young. I was right out of school. So everything was big and impressive. And I was literally walking through the halls of Congress to get to work. But, you know, the congressman was there and he was this kind of larger than life figure in a lot of ways. And to contrast that memory of him with the description of him sitting with his head in his hands, bawling for 15 minutes in the lavatory of an airplane was just like, wait, what? This is so different. This can't be happening. But I love that he shared that because I think it's a great reminder. It was a great reminder for me and a great reminder for all of us that you can be a congressman, you can be a CEO, you can be a chief of staff, you can be someone with a fancy title, but before you're any of those things, you're a human. And so sometimes you're going to, you know, be flying high and be on top of the world. And sometimes you're going to be like, I need to sit down and have a little breakdown here because I can't handle this. And when I think about my experience with imposter syndrome and certainly speaking to a whole bunch of clients and other people about imposter syndrome, it's a very real thing. And I think it was a great reminder to say, oh, a sitting U.S. congressman can have this experience too, is just like, yep, we're all human. Let's level set and get back to basics there. All right. So the first symptom the congressman experiences is knee pain. So he starts having these pain in the different joints. So knee pain and hip pain. And he mentions the fact that he was a runner and he was into fitness. And I remember this from my time that summer, he would often go to the gym and then pop back for meetings. So he'd go to the gym real quick and pop back for his meetings. And he was very physically fit when I knew him. And he mentions in the book, there came a point where I couldn't run anymore. And so for fitness, I had to do quick walking or walk up a hill, these different things, but I couldn't run anymore. And when I read that, I thought back to my summer, and it was common knowledge and kind of a joke in the office that the congressman could run from his office, which was in the Cannon building at the time, to the floor to cast a vote in 7 minutes if he ran. So if he had to and he had to like sprint, he could get there in 7 minutes to cast a vote. And so his staff knew this. Certainly his chief of staff knew this when she was organizing, hey, we're going to have you in this meeting. Hey, we're going to allow these people to talk to you for 15 minutes. Hey, we're going to have to get you down to the floor to get your vote. And then you need to come back over here for this meeting with your legislative assistants and all these different things. But she knew and we knew he could get to the floor in 7 minutes if he had to. So when I heard, oh, he couldn't run anymore, I thought, what was his new time? How long did it take him now? And it got to a point where he was describing walking around with a cane and stairs were difficult. And I was like, oh my gosh, when you're a congressman, you're on the move all the time. You're in meetings, you're on planes, you're visiting constituents, you're hosting different foreign delegations, you are going to Iraq and Afghanistan in certain cases. And if you can't get upstairs, you know, that's going to be super challenging for you. So anyway, he starts experiencing these physical issues, and then he has his first panic attack. And that's what gets his attention and says, okay, something is happening here. I know I need to go find some help. And so he looks for a therapist and he looks for a counselor, and he's traveling back and forth between Washington State and Washington, D.C., literally across the country. And he's trying to figure out, where do I see someone? Like, where do I find a therapist? Who is covered by my insurance? All these different things. And as he's meeting with different potential therapists, there's one he describes where, you know, they were a little bit cold and they were a little bit, not the most friendly. And I always wondered if it was because they didn't like my politics. And I thought, that's so sad and tough. You're having panic attacks. You're in a scary situation. You're trying to get help and you're having to deal with stuff like that. And then he finds a therapist who prescribes some medication. And he talks about, when I was going to pick up my prescription, I was worried that the pharmacist might recognize me and then recognize the name of the medication and put that together. And so that was his initial kind of stage of this. And when it was new, when it was scary, when he was worried about people finding out because he wasn't quite sure what was going on. And in that moment, the only person on his team he told was his chief of staff. The only member of his team who he trusted enough and said, hey, I need someone to know about this. One, so I can talk about it. But two, you know, if I have to go to this meeting over here with my therapist and come back, I need you to know where I am. And you can coordinate that with the rest of the schedule, the rest of the staff. And so the only member he told was his chief of staff. Another fun story about his chief of staff was the congressman was recounting when he got a phone call from his chief of staff, and she was giving him rapid fire updates saying, hey, you know, I met with this group of people and here's the debrief. They said this, your legislative assistant was in this meeting. Here's the debrief. By the way, the terrorism subcommittee is yours if you want it. And then you're going to be flying home next Tuesday to go visit your constituents in this building in Seattle. And the special operations forces want to take you to Iraq and Afghanistan and show you some things that they're doing. And your LA, your legislative assistants, we're talking with this general and that general about this, this, and that. And so those are my updates. And, you know, again, by the way, the terrorism subcommittee is yours if you want it. And I was like, I would have loved to have said the terrorism subcommittee is yours if you want it and just rattled that off in part of my updates. But alas, I did not get to say something as cool as that in my time of chief of staff. But maybe if you are the COS for a congressman, you're good to say cool things like that. Okay, so he's dealing with all these symptoms and they get worse and worse and worse. And he sees over 100 healthcare providers and professionals in different areas for kind of counselors, therapists, mental health folks, and then physical therapists. And he finds this muscle activation technique that works for him. And it's this long, arduous, years and years long journey. But he finds people who are able to help him and are able to look at the whole picture. So instead of this specific symptom or this one thing in isolation, the holistic picture as a whole person, he finds a therapist that he can talk to about some of the things that happened in his childhood and work through those things. He finds the right mix of medication to manage what's happening until he can work through that on his own and move forward without medication or with minimal medication. And so he has all of these things happen. And he obviously gets to a point where if you're like walking with a cane and you're having surgeries, you have to disclose that to your staff, and his colleagues know about this as well. And there's this one story where he was, you know, going back and forth when he was chairing a committee and back and forth with someone across the aisle, and they were voicing their opinions on a policy issue that were different. But after the meeting, the colleague came up to him and said, you know, we all see how much pain you're in, and we all see that you are still coming to work and you're running the committee and doing a good job, you know, irrespective of our policy differences. And I just admire you for that. And I thought, oh, that's a really nice interaction to hear about. And it's good that those interactions can happen. Okay, so a couple takeaways. First of all, it's okay not to be okay. It's okay not to be flying high and be performing perfectly all the time. It's okay to talk about it, and it's certainly okay to reach out for help if you need it. And the congressman actually has some really good resources listed at the back of his book that were helpful to him. So I will list those in the show notes in case you need them or you are interested in looking at them or could be helpful for someone else. So it's okay not to be okay. And let's talk about these things. And it's a human experience. So it's not something to be ashamed of. The second piece I want to touch on there is you can be going through mental health issues and still be a top performer. You can still be good at your job. You can still be successful. All these things, they're not either or like, oh, okay, now that you have had a mental health issue or have had anxiety or depression, then like you can no longer, you know, be in these high level roles. You can no longer make a difference. People are going to say, you know, you're not qualified to be in that type of position. So this literally is proof that you can be working through these things and going through these things and be at the top of your field, be at the, you know, upper echelons and be a high performer and high achiever. So I wanted to definitely get that point out there. The second takeaway would be the chief of staff really can have that special relationship with their principal and really can be that trusted confidant. In moments of professional vulnerability and personal vulnerability, a principal can rely on their chief of staff. And I looked up where the chief of staff was after I read the book, and she has since moved on from being the congressman's chief of staff, but she was his chief of staff for 25 years. So for 25 years, and she started as his executive assistant and rose to the ranks to become chief of staff. So that can certainly build a foundation and get to the point where like, yes, this is my go-to person. This is my trusted confidant. And in the press release announcing that she was moving on, he's, you know, very gracious and said, the successes of our office are no small part due to her tireless work as a leader and mentor to the whole staff, both in the Capitol and in our district. And I think that's a really good description of a strong chief of staff. You're mentoring, you're guiding the entire staff. You are the chief of staff. And he also calls her out by name in his acknowledgement section and gives her credit for the fantastic role that she did for him and also how she led the entire team. And the third takeaway is around how we see ourselves and how we see other people. And one of the things the congressman mentioned was before he started having all these issues, he was fairly critical of people and a little bit judgmental of if you didn't have your stuff together or if you're not in control of your emotions, if you have an emotional outburst and you're angry and you can't control that, well, like what's wrong with you? And afterward, he said, I often ask, what's happening with that person? What type of pain are they in? What are they going through? And it certainly doesn't excuse some behavior. Some behavior still needs to be addressed or course corrected, but it's a different lens through which to look at that situation, look at that person. And so I thought that was a really, really good reminder for us all too. And to round out that takeaway, I'll actually read a quick excerpt from the book. So here is a quick paragraph from the congressman himself. Hating yourself isn't healthy. You bounce back and forth between soul-crushing guilt and anger at the idea that the world you live in seems to think you are worthless. That anger pops out in highly unpredictable ways. If you have unresolved anger or guilt over something going on in your life right now, or something that happened to you in your past, that isn't healthy either and creates more anger inside of you. It's also not healthy to hate other people, which is why it is so important to understand not just that this basic self-worth applies to you, but that it also applies to everybody else. Good note to end on. Go forth, be good chiefs of staff, be great leaders, take care of yourself, take care of other people, ask for help if you need it, offer help if someone needs it, and I will catch you next time on Leveraging Leadership.
Sharing is caring. Send a link to this show to someone you think would enjoy it and tag Emily on LinkedIn. She'll give you a shout out on the next episode as a thank you for helping get the word out.